Over here! Welcome, everybody. You have myself, Joseph Kim, and Monte Lonsrick, and we are going to be talking about the five biggest mobile game launches of the past year. There's a lot of talk about IDFA deprecation, mobile game is dead, everything's over.
Everything can't be
successful, and yet we've got five games that we're going to look at. Honkai Star Rail, Survivor.io, Monopoly Go, Marvel Snap, and
Frozen City.
So these are the five games that we have looked at and believe to be the five biggest launches over the past year.
Today's episode is sponsored by Data.ai to access estimates for rankings, downloads, revenue, usage, or engagement for millions of apps on the App Store and Google Play. Sign up for Data.ai.
Before we dive in, I know we're going to be broadcasting this to both of our audiences, game makers, and to 2.5 gamers. But for the game makers audience who doesn't know who you are, Mate, and why you are the best person in the world.
In the world.
To speak about mobile game launches and UA, take a minute.
Thanks
about who you are.
Okay, let's take a minute. So I've been in the industry 10 years, working different companies, UA consultant, soft launching global launcher on 35 games in the past years, spending around like 40 million-ish profitably. And I'm the host of the No Bullshit Gaming podcast, 2.5 Gamers. Great to be here. You should introduce to the audience of 2.5 Gamers.
Yes.
We had you on.
Yes, so if anyone saw the 2.5 Gamers episode with me, if you haven't, go check it out. Yeah. But I'm mainly known for being the handsomest executive in the games industry. But besides that, we don't need to talk about that. Besides that, I am the CEO of a FPS gaming studio, mobile first, based out of India. Leela Games, and do stuff on game makers, create some content that I think is interesting, that is important, critical information to give you that alpha, that edge, and why we are going to be, or how you can be successful in the market. So now we are going to look at these five big game launches, and we've got some numbers. Maybe we can go over the numbers and dive into these in detail?
Okay, let's start with Honkai, or... You want to go through the...
What I could do is I'll go over the numbers and then maybe splice in what in post. I can kind of show some of the stuff. But game, Honkai Star Rail. Publisher is HoYoverse, formerly known as MiHoYo. Yeah. Although I think the way to pronounce it, everyone pronounces it differently and the Chinese pronounce it differently.
Okay.
This was launched April 26th of this year. So far, cumulative downloads, 54.6 million downloads. It's done about 180 million in cumulative net revenue. This is net. And so, you know, in my opinion, this is, you know, we'll talk about it more depth, but this has been like a huge winner, huge game, massive, you know, kind of success.
Massive success. But if you have 4,000 employees, there's no other way. Just have to be a success.
And we'll talk about this. The other game that I'm surprised about, Survivor.io.
Really?
Habby, August 11th, 2022. So it launched a little bit earlier, towards the end of last year.
It was a huge launch last year. Huge launch. So you might know Habby from Archero. And this is another game. They actually launched, I think, like two other games last year.
Right.
But this is definitely like the biggest success. They launched recently Snaker, but not even close to the success of Survivor.io.
So close to 69 million cumulative downloads right now and about 268 million in cumulative net revenue.
Which is IIP only. And there is definitely an additional revenue on ads.
Yes. So this is making a shit ton of money. It's raining dollars for Survivor.io, so like good for those guys.
It's really a great game as well, and like a huge success.
Next is Monopoly Go by Scopely, launched April 12th of this year.
Not a long time ago.
Yeah. Cumulative downloads so far about 22.5 million, and cumulative revenue about 28 million in net revenue. This is all from Data.ai data. I think. We've also looked at some of the Sensor Tower data.
Yeah.
Some discrepancies.
Yeah, there are some differences, yeah.
sometimes small, sometimes big, but you know, we can talk about that as well. Next, Marvel Snap, published by Newverse. And coincidentally, I just came from speaking to the Newverse guys, so out of the TikTok office in Culver City. So literally nice. just came from meeting those guys, can provide a few additional insights.
Nice.
October 18th, 2022 launch, so late last year. 17.2 million cumulative downloads and about 79 million in cumulative revenue. So, okay.
No ads there.
No ad revenue is what Mate means.
Yeah.
And finally, Frozen City. Now, I played all of these games. I gotta say, the game that I am impressed by, and this is not just because, by the way, there is a Fun Plus angle, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Century kind of spun out of Fun Plus. There's some relationships there. There's some shared people there, but I was actually quite impressed playing this game. We'll talk about it. December 26th of last year launch. So odd timing.
Interesting time.
Like when we get there, I think you should speak about like, you know, December launch.
And
that timing. About 17, 18 million downloads and cumulative downloads so far. And about 26 million in cumulative revenue. And similarly, there are some ads.
Right. Significant amount of money on ads as well. It's working quite well. And I mean, there are some estimations that Felix done when we talked about the game before. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it's like 30-40% on top of what we see. It's additional revenue in ads, ad revenue.
Wow.
Not bad. Yeah, not bad.
Okay. So maybe we can dive in, starting with Honkai Star Rail. Now, maybe before we dive in, we can provide a little bit of context in terms of miHoYo as well. So in my opinion, this is a company with a very differentiated strategy, right? Mm-hmm. So these guys are big ballers.
They're like, definitely.
They are coming in hard and strong, and they have a significant moat because, for example, when we think about Genshin Impact, they spent $100 million in development reportedly.
Okay.
And they're spending $200 million in live ops a year. So, like, when you think about the kinds of studios that can compete against this strategy of super high production value, right? So you got massive production value, and then you're launching a game with a free-to-play model. It's a very different model from what from anyone else that I'm seeing. And the word on the street, and you know, I'm one of the few people who actually hears the from China.
Oh, nice.
With my Chinese connections.
Okay.
But reportedly, kind of like the strategy behind HoYoVerse is actually to try to become like the Nintendo of free-to-play mobile.
Interesting.
So basically, like you can just go down the line of all of the games, like, you know, of course, Zelda, Genshin, but like, you know, other games. So you can expect the future game strategy of HoYoVerse to be, we're going to look at the most successful titles on Nintendo, on Switch, and then we're going to try to create a free-to-play mobile cross-platform version of that. And by the way, we have our massive Chinese team that works 996, and we have the massive budget. Try to mess with us. Try to follow us. No, we're going to fuck you up.
That's kind of the strategy. That's not going to happen. Okay. No, honestly, if you have that amount of employees, it's just like it's hard to compete.
Right.
And the quality bar for Genshin and Honkai is just like, it's amazing.
So right now, when we look at HoYoVerse, two top worldwide grossing games, right? Genshin and this, and behind these two games, they are now one of the top five publishers in the world. And just looking at, let's see, just checking their stats here, we can see, so downloads have actually dropped off quite a lot.
I mean, of course.
Well, on a relative basis for them.
Yeah.
But still, we're looking at
like 100,000.
120 a day.
Yeah.
Which is for still, any other company,
That's pretty huge. But the amount of revenues they're making on a daily basis.
Revenue is kind of holding. We're seeing some spikes. What the hell was this?
I'm pretty sure that was a live ops event or anything. Well, I think Jakub mentioned there was like a new character introduced in the game.
Okay.
And it's like...
That was probably what happened around
mid-May.
Yeah, or mid-May. That really drove the revenue. I think that I didn't check RPD here, but I assumed that, you know, if we're talking about
again, out of the roof,
it's probably going up and to the right. Was there anything you saw from like, you know, a marketing perspective that you think that they did differently, or what was your take on how they launched?
How they launched, I was expecting, I wasn't expecting that, honestly, like, they would spend anything because, well, it's just big game, they have Genshin, but they're actually spending, I have no idea how much money, but I would expect a lot.
Sure.
But then they have, I mean, China is top one market, right? Then there is Japan, and then there is US on the third spot. And there are the usual suspects, which is the Google and Facebooks and all of the fun stuff. Then they have the Moloco, which is, I mean, that's like a hot shit nowadays in the UA space. I mean, I have no idea like what they are doing, but apparently, and I see it on my side as well, like that UA channel and then DSP is working super well on different games. So you're actually buying from different ad networks anyway.
Right. So for our audience, and especially in mind, they're not as tuned into UA. So when you say a DSP, can you explain to the audience what you mean by that?
Let's call it a programmatic buying. Yeah. And let's simplify things. So they have an inventory of different ad networks. Like here we can see they're buying from Unity, AdColony, Vangel, Upline, and others, but they have their own mechanism and algorithms for for bidding. So, and then you can just deploy a lot of budgets into it.
It's amazing how little Facebook is now.
It's very little, I know, right? So it's very, very little. And I mean, if we had this conversation like 2 or 3 years ago, I was like, Facebook would be top one, then Google, and then everything else.
Apple, you got your way. You accomplished, mission accomplished. You guys destroyed Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's on Android, it's just so competitive on Facebook. It just doesn't work that much. On iOS, it's slightly different story, but still, I mean, you have all the other networks, but if you are, you know, spending 200 million on live ops, then you need to spend across the, like, all of the channels, basically. Right. And now we actually talked about the Nightcross that you mentioned with Jakub.
Okay.
And even like they had this like offline marketing in South Korea quite heavily. So I'm pretty sure like these guys have their own ways of how to market their game in these areas. But honestly, they still, the country distribution is, like I said, like US, then Japan, Korea. And I mean, we don't see the China in these tools that much. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty sure like that's like huge. And they're creatives. And we can show it some things in the post-production as well. It's just so beautiful. I mean, so beautiful. In other games, like a lot of other like strategies on the creative side, like fake ads, misleading ads, like these guys don't need to do it at all. They just use all the nice characters, the gameplay, it feels so beautiful.
Right. And maybe for our audience, the other important thing to note is that a lot of the data services, whether it's data.ai or Sensor Tower, will not track like the alternative app stores in China. And for a game, like some of these top Chinese games are not only dominating like some of the charts, but they're also not counting the revenue from the alternative app stores. So the money is huge.
We don't have the PC revenue as well,
right?
And I'm pretty sure like this is like, also like super huge.
Right. So long story short, it's good to be HoYoverse.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's good to have 4,000 employees. If you can afford that, then of course, like you can dominate the whole world basically.
Yeah.
And now, like you see, on the revenue, as soon as they, I can't imagine if they can spend more money on the live ops, but I'm pretty sure they will eventually, and that should just go up.
Right.
And with this type of monetization, I mean, the UA is like basically easy, but with this type of budget, I guess it's just like almost the shotgun approach. Like you would just be everywhere, like Mobile Strike and Machine Zone back in the days. You just open up the fridge, and then there's Arnold Schwarzenegger. Instead, like, this is going to be characters from, I guess, the whole HoYoverse now.
Yeah.
It's nice.
So should we move on or anything?
Yeah, let's move on because now like this feels like very out of the reach for like a lot of companies, mm-hmm. but it's always good to talk about like the huge successes. Like okay. it's good for like motivation.
Maybe the second game we should talk about, let's see here, we probably, Monopoly Go. Okay, the most controversial.
Yeah.
Controversy.
Controversy everywhere.
How well is Monopoly Go doing? Okay, so now.
Yeah. We can.
If we look at the numbers,
okay.
by the numbers, it appears that Monopoly Go is doing really well. So if you look at, for example, the downloads, they have not dropped off.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah.
They're going. And the revenue is, you can see the early revenue stacking and it's going up
up. Yeah.
Now, the question though is, okay, these guys are spending a lot.
Yes, that's the word on the street. Like they're spending quite a lot of money on the daily
basis. Now the word on the street is that the internal people from Scopely are saying, this is a great game. This game is monetizing like crazy. But, okay, so here's my concern.
Okay,
my concern is like the amount and scale that it seems like they're spending. So like I can understand some people going hard during launch because you want to, and there's different philosophies, but one philosophy is you want to try and get launch velocity. You want to get a lot of people behind the game, especially during that kind of golden cohort phase, but they haven't done that and eased off and said, okay, let's see where these ARPUs are getting to. Yeah. Let's see how this game scales. It seems like they're just pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
We're going, guys. We're rolling. And it's like, okay, but so my concern is this, okay? So they were in soft launch for a while. So I assume they kind of understand what the shape of their ARPU curve looks like.
Okay.
But when you go hard, when you go much higher scale, and when you go to, focus on a geo like the US more specifically, like, will they be able to maintain that ARPU growth over time? You know, how well, because here's what I know of Scopely. These guys are some aggressive marketers, right?
Yeah.
They're aggressive growth guys. And they go a lot off of, basically, it's common to go off of like D3, D7 ROAS. I think they call D7 ROAS, D7 recoup.
Okay.
But what often happens is you basically can sometimes like pick your budget and you tell me, like, I'm not the expert, you're the expert, right? So sometimes you'll look at your D7 to lifetime and you'll assume a ratio.
Yeah.
And they may have done that based upon other geos and based upon the initial D7s that they're seeing right now. You're assuming that continues to grow. And I think that they're being very aggressive. Also, you got to think about strategically with Savvy. Savvy wants to be a number one publisher. Savvy wants to have, like, strategically, they want to go. So I feel like you've got a company known for aggressive push in the past who may not have been profitable in the past.
Yeah. No, nobody knows.
Word on the street.
Nobody knows.
Until COVID. And then you've got a buyer and an operator now through Savvy who just wants to push with a shit ton of money and who don't really care about profitability.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm not so sure about is I think they're making a lot of assumptions on their D7 to lifetime and they're pushing really hard.
Yeah.
But this may not actually be super profitable. We don't know. I'm not saying.
But it looks like
money.
Yeah. But it looks like it's not there yet.
They're losing money now.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
100%. But they're assuming they're going to get paid back. But also, the other thing that they could be doing, and where this might make sense, is I don't know if you remember the old like Japanese strategy, especially when you had the old CCG gacha based games like Rage of Bahamut back in those days, but they used to build their UA models not only off of a single game, but they would basically have UA model against a portfolio.
Okay, so it's based on like all the games, and then you have like a LTV of the whole portfolio.
LTV kind of the user based upon, hey, we're going to get this user.
And then he will spend it across the whole games.
And for the Japanese had this model where it's like, okay, after a certain point in the lifetime of a player, they're going to push them to this other gacha CCG game, and then another gacha. And they may they may model 2 to 3 games out. So anyway, that's why I'm a little bit skeptical that you can't be comparing Monopoly Go apples to apples against other game launches.
Almost probably no.
And that this, the calling Monopoly Go a success right now, based upon what I know historically.
It's very early to say it's success. I mean, it, the game grows like crazy. That's true. The revenue grows like crazy. But also, if you spend a ton of money on a daily basis, which words on the streets, it's millions. Nobody knows. nobody knows if it's if that's true.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be very hard to actually recoup that money. And even if you are looking at what, like a year, maybe 2 years, like...
It's, yeah, it's like the old social casino guys were like anywhere from 18 to 24 months, right?
Yeah.
At one point in time.
And this category, even if you have the Monopoly IP, I mean, it's not cheap.
There's going to be a rev share here.
True, yeah, of course.
Guessing 20%? Guessing?
Guessing. So yeah, you need to make like 20% more to actually be profitable at some point in the future with like really high CPIs in this category. And you have 300,000 daily installs. And there's like the top one is still like US, which makes me wonder, like that's a lot of money.
Right. Now, maybe the other game we could talk about or think about is like it is very similar to Coin Master, right? So if it can get Coin Master ARPU, then I think it should be okay. It should do well. Then the question is that, so this is a question that, you know, and I haven't played Monopoly Go long enough or well enough, and I don't know that genre well enough, but, you know, then I think if you're really interested in understanding how well Monopoly will fare over time, then it would be like, okay, what are the differences between a Coin Master versus a Monopoly Go?
Yeah.
And does it have the ability to reach the kind of monetization characteristics of a Coin Master?
Well,
have you guys deconstructed this as part of 2.5?
We are planning to, actually.
Okay. So this is what you should be asking.
Because we have talked about preparations for this, and then the comparison to Coin Master is actually that what we talked about,
right?
And how we should think about it, because people compare it to Coin Master quite heavily, but I'm not so sure if it's anywhere close there. Of course, like there are similar, there are different games like Dice Dreams, and like there are different iterations. Jakub already talked about it in his LinkedIn post.
Yeah.
I guess it's fair, but in terms of the US strategy now, like they're pushing so hard, I'm most probably sure that they will need to like slow down very, very soon, because it's not sustainable. I mean, the revenue grows, but it's going to peak very, very soon. I mean, I'm guessing like 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
2 weeks from now. And then we'll deconstruct like, okay, so now, like, yeah, this is time. Because, I mean, it's super aggressive, honestly.
Right.
I wasn't expecting this type of revenue growth and the 300K downloads per day. It's just like, since they launched, it's flat, like you said. And yeah, well, I'm not, yeah, I... Even if you compare the ARPU curve from soft launch, it's different scale.
Yeah.
It's a very different scale. So it's not like apples to apples. Like, I mean, right. The shape might be the same, but honestly, with this type of budget on a daily basis, it might not be even 2 years.
Right. And the other thing for our audience, just like, be, you know, UA 101, and Mate's the expert, I'm not the expert, but one of the things, a concept for product managers, executives to understand is like, if you were to think of a, so I'll talk into this camera. So if you think about a two-dimensional graph where you have like volume on the x-axis and cost CPI on the y-axis, what happens is you push volume is that you often get kind of an exponential curve at some point. There's going to be a bend in terms of the graph at certain scales of volume. And so the question is, they have not operated at this scale before. They were sitting in soft for a while. So a lot of the assumptions that you make as you start to scale up start to break down. And that's the risk, is that, you know, and that's also one of the reasons why some people will push the first 2 weeks and then ease off and say, okay, let's see where we're at. These guys are not ease off type of guys. They're like, And boom, we're going.
And also, you mentioned the golden cohort. Golden cohort is always better.
Yes.
In terms of like all the KPIs.
Yes.
The lowest CPI and the highest LTV, which honestly, by now, it's over already.
And so sometimes what people will do is they'll take the golden cohort KPIs and extrapolate forward.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, oh,
it looks pretty good. Yeah, it looks pretty good. Let's push even more. And then after 3 months, you wake up like, oh, shit.
Yeah, and when you've got like a 18 to 24 month payback period, that original guy who built that aggressive model
he's already gone. Yeah, he's already gone from the company. He's like, oh, well, you can blame this. No, honestly, like, this is very risky. But again, like, if you have a new buyer, the buyer of the company, and then you have shit ton of money,
and there's strategic reasons.
Yeah, and we don't have the full context, of course.
And even if they're not profitable, then, you know, somebody comes back and builds them all that, oh, yeah, we're always wanted to do the portfolio strategy, right? Yeah. We're banking on getting these.
You know, these Japanese companies, they did it as well. Yeah. I heard it on the podcast before. Let's listen to this. No. Yeah, it's risky. Let's see what happens. But yeah, I'm not a very big fan of this type of like splash global launches anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, if you have the money, but you gradually spending and seeing like how the cohorts mature.
Right.
1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then you can actually scale.
Yeah. So one of the things that I have talked about before is kind of this notion about moving from the previous zero interest rate market environment, age of excess, into an age of efficiency. Now, if you're trying to buy efficiently, this is not the strategy.
Yeah, this is not the strategy. Because people ask, like, oh, well, like, they are doing so well. I was like, how do you know they're doing so well? But, you know, like, look, the revenue is increasing.
Yeah.
Yes, but do you know how much they spend? Oh, well, we don't, but we assume, like, it's going well. Like, fine.
Yeah. So once you test for scale, once you see the longer-term ARPU curve, then you can go back and say, ah, yeah, we made the right decision. And again, I don't think either of us are saying they made the wrong decision.
No, of course not.
But we're saying they're making a hella aggressive decision.
Yeah,
and there's some risk there.
And risk bets for the future.
Right.
Future revenues and profits in particular.
All right, the next big launch.
Ah, this is my favorite.
Survivor.io. Now, this is a game, I found it fun. I thought it was very interesting how you take this, you know, replayable game mechanic. You're adding a lot of long-term progression to that game, which is clever. But, you know, can you speak to how do you think they're doing? Or
so they're doing quite well. I mean, Jakub could talk about this for years.
Okay.
He loves the like unfolding gameplay, all the fun game design stuff, like how you actually progress the game, and then they are showcasing or unfolding new features for you, which monetize like hell. But now, so they made this like huge splash launch, and they were spending like crazy. There were also some like words on the street that they spent quite extensively on TikTok.
Okay.
In the first few weeks and months. And they used even like a different product, which was called it's still called like Top View. It's like almost like a branding campaign.
Yeah.
Of course, if you put that in place, TikTok kind of helps you to be on the first position like everywhere.
Okay.
So that worked quite well. And then there were these days like, look, so the revenue, like,
it's kind of holding steady with typical event spikes, things like that.
And they were just on 1 million a day revenue in like 4 or 5 days since the global launch.
Wow.
And it's like a combination of in-apps and ads revenue. And it's like 50-50 almost split.
Right.
So everything we see here, which is, where is it? Here, which is now, you had it somewhere else. We had it here. So it's like 270 million. And then I think you can add another 200 million to that revenue on the ads revenue side.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
It's super, super good in terms of the like implementation in the game. You just want to watch those ads. It's like 6 or 7 placements and they're uncovering like different other placements. Beautifully done.
Yeah, so don't sleep on Survivor.io, guys. Like, people are talking about certain games as being the best game out there, but it's like, We got some strong launches here. You know, I think, well, one, clearly there's Honkai, which is in one universe.
Yeah, it's different.
And then there's everybody else.
Everybody else, yeah, there's everybody else, of course. But these guys from Hubby, they're like also pretty aggressive in terms of launching games and then monetization. They have this like meta game framework that they now apply to all of their games.
Yeah.
But this one, it's especially working well because of the whole like marketability and theme. It's just packed into this like almost like a hyper casual visual style,
right?
Which is also, we are going to talk about the Frozen City, which is very similar, but this is slightly different. They're using like these like hordes of different monsters everywhere. It's just super overwhelming in the creatives.
Yeah.
Now, almost all mid-core games using their creative strategy now, fake ads, fake as shit, but taken from Survivor.io because they created something that works really well.
Right. And for our audience, just so you know, in terms of Hubby itself, this makes sense because if you think about where they came from, right? So they actually came from Cheetah.
Cheetah Mobile, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, these guys were basically ad publishing, like hyper-casual experts, worked for a while. The word on the street was they were actually already kind of working on the side on this.
That's how it works, man.
So they kind of knew they were going to be successful even before they left. That's word on the street, rumor, again, rumor, conjecture, speculation. But I think that helps you understand that this is the type of company, if we talk about strategy, understanding the marketability and the potential to get growth for a game, even before you make the game, that's where the expertise comes from. And by the way, no, not to take anything away from Archero or from Survivor.io, yeah. But what I'm saying is like, they also have that in their DNA.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And also like Archero was a big success, like genre defining basically. And now they did it again with Survivor. And like, it's even like better and way, way better than Archero was ever, like in terms of downloads and revenues.
And can you speak on like in terms of their marketing mix or things that they've done? You mentioned TikTok. Was there anything else that kind of stood out to you?
There was really big splash on TikTok, mainly on iOS and Android, but mainly on iOS. Like now they're spending almost everything on iOS. Mm. It's like very big amount of budgets. And even if you look at like,
so they're spending on iOS despite IDFA.
Exactly. So iOS is dead. They're still spending like crazy on iOS, and it's working quite well for them, apparently, right, based on the revenues. And honestly, the mix is just very easy to understand. It's TikTok, Google, Facebook, AppLovin. AppLovin, actually, when we discussed different game launches in the last 6 months, mm-hmm, AppLovin was always like top three. They're also doing something very interesting, mm, in terms of performance. It improved so heavily. But here, I think what's most important on iOS, they're doing different mixes in terms of geo. So you have the South Korea, Japan, and Asia, and then they have the US.
Yeah.
So they're also big, not only in the US, but also in Asian countries, which makes a lot of sense. And also like revenue. And we don't have the China the revenues as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're based on, they're developers from China. So they know their shit. They know what they're doing in that market. And in terms of,
Before you move on, as far as the mix there, so you see whether the different ad networks and things like that, where do you see the mix? What are the top performing ad networks for a game like this?
For a game like this, it's Google way more than Facebook. I mean, like you said, Facebook is just minimum. You want to have it in the mix, but it's not the top spender. It's usually Google, TikTok, and I see AppLovin these days. So those are top three.
All right.
If you have ad monetized game, it's definitely AppLovin because of the AdRoas campaign. So if you mediate with Max, their mediation platform, then you can run AdRoas campaigns, which is basically targeting whales, but on the ad revenue side. Mm-hmm. Then you have Google, which you can also run AdRoas campaigns, and Unity as well. You can also AdRoas campaigns. So in this, like this is, I joked around, this game is just basically a UA manager's wet dream because we have in-apps and you have ads as well. And if it's 50-50, you can use so many options. In-app revenues, like value optimization, so target whales, and then AdRoas campaigns. And you can even use like app even optimized campaigns, like any engagement event. So
you got to use Max.
You don't need to use Macs.
Okay.
It's you just, if you have a healthy split on the ad side versus in-apps, you can use whatever mediation you have.
And it's no longer dangerous to use AppLovin. Well, they are trying to get rid of their games business. So
yeah, we'll see.
I think they've learned their lesson. Yeah. I think so. It, maybe, guys, you can dip your toes into the AppLovin waters again.
Yeah. Honestly, it's been one of the best performing channels in the last 6 months. So it's
sure. They've always performed well. It was just the question was, were they going to take their data and compete against
you? It was a little bit shady, yeah, right? But no, like this was like one of the biggest launches for sure, like for last year, and it's still making shit ton of money, honestly. So they shifted the strategy on the creative side from using only the gameplay oriented videos to actually something which is really interesting,
right.
And they used it for Snake, and now they implemented it back to Survivor.io, which is using actually AI people in the UGC creative. So instead of using real humans, they use AI. I used it as well, and it's just outperforming really by far.
Okay.
And it's easy to produce. You can create like 10 iterations out of nowhere in like an hour.
Okay.
It's perfect. And it was so funny because I know those people are made by AI because I used it, but people, they don't know. I talked about it with Jakub and Felix,
right?
And they're like, I wouldn't say. It's just like so natural, like perfect, really. Great, like guys on the UA side and monetization side, chef's kiss. Really, seriously, like hats off.
Nice.
Hats off.
All right, Marvel Snap.
Oh, man.
Okay?
Yeah.
So how do we start on Marvel Snap? So, and by the way, I just saw these guys, so I don't want to say anything mean
because
I like them.
Yeah.
But okay, so let's put it this way. You saw
the Newverse guys, not the
Yeah, no, not the second year, just to be clear, on the publishing side. But it's the publishing side where there's let's just be honest. Okay, so we're kind of insiders in the industry, so we hear a lot from a lot of different people. The game itself obviously is a good game. It's actually kind of interesting. So just the setup in terms of more information for our audience about Snap is that, so they were funded by NetEase. I think they raised $30 million to make...
Even more. I think it's 50.
Is it more? Okay, the initial funding was 30.
Okay. Nice.
So I don't know if the other 20 additional 20 came from non-NetEase or if it's all NetEase. Interestingly, you never have a situation like this where you have two different Chinese companies. One does the investment and one does
the publishing.
It's unusual.
Yeah.
So for ByteDance Newverse to come in and do the publishing is unusual. But I would say that like the word on the street is like actually how well, I mean, great for Second Dinner, you know, and by the way, these are like the ex-Blizzard Hearthstone guys, so they know the CCG category pretty well. But the word internally amongst a lot of people, and you know, I can say this because people are tweeting about it and things like that, is like that the game economically has not been great for Newverse. Now, great for Second Dinner. And so, you know, on the one hand, it's like, okay, great. Newverse really will push the shit out of a game. Great, right? But then if we're talking about the five best launches over the past year, can we consider Marvel Snap to be one of the best launches? I would say...
One of the biggest launches, let's say.
Sure, it's one of the biggest launches, but like from an economics perspective, you know, we would probably... Just like I would kind of discount Monopoly Go right now, I'd probably discount Marvel Snap as a economically successful big launch for now. But I don't know, what do you think? What's your take?
Yeah, so the thing is, Newverse is still spending a second year of money. So they are actually operating that budget. And, you know, the launch was, when I was looking at the game at that time when they launched it, it felt like a playbook from 2013 or 14. Just like huge amounts of like installs from everywhere. Honestly, I saw Ben Broad on Facebook like 10 times a day.
Uh-huh.
If you think about it.
Well, what are you doing on Facebook?
Okay, true. Twitter as well, by the way, Twitter as well, and Instagram as well, and then LinkedIn. So it's that's my main social media.
Okay.
But I saw him like multiple times a day. If you think about it, the frequency of that ad, it's just like crazy high.
So they hired an old MZ guy, I bet.
Yeah, exactly.
They must have hired an old MZ guy.
Most probably, like, yes.
Yeah, I remember what we did for Game of War in 2013.
Yeah. And that was, I think, like, that wasn't, like, very efficient on the first place. So that's why I think, like, the economic didn't work that well. Because if you do this type of, like, big splash gold launches, you can't do it like we think Monopoly Go does it. Because I think, like, they're pushing on in-app site or, like, app-even optimized purchase campaigns, value-optimized campaigns, just because the ARPU is, like, increasing like crazy.
Right.
In here, it was, like, most probably not that down the funnel. It was mainly like installs. And if you run these type of campaigns, you can't expect a lot of money back.
Yeah. And by the way, Marvel is expensive. Just so people know.
You mean in terms of IP and license?
IP, oh, the, nice. On the IP licensing side. So you're talking about one of the most, you know, economically... Well, now the Marvel guy. Well, fuck it. I mean, look, it's expensive. I'll put it that way.
It's expensive. Yeah.
Don't get mad at me, Marvel guys. But okay. You're not showing me much love anyway. So.
Okay, but you know, we mentioned that they made like 80 million based on the data AI since the global launch. Mm-hmm. So, words on the streets, they spend a lot of money during the first 2 weeks on the global launch,
right.
Which maybe in like tens of millions.
Yeah, and I mean. I would say just based upon, like, I haven't played a lot of Snap, but...
I played a lot of Snap.
And we, you know, there's people in our community that have played a lot, but clearly the monetization is light.
Yeah, 100%. It's very light. It's like no gacha. It's
although they tried gacha.
Yeah, there was a backlash. But, you know, like, Ridicor also had a different monetization. Then they put gacha in the game, and then suddenly, instead of making 10 or 20K a day, they just started making... 200,000 or 300,000 per day immediately.
Yeah.
Just off all community, but then, you know.
And when you say that they used the old 2013 playbook, so they did do some things like, you know, Sam Jackson video, things like that.
But it was only like for like short period of time, and it was only live on TikTok. I mean, if you have this type of video, you just show it everywhere.
Okay.
Everywhere. They're like, there is America Chavez in the videos, which is obviously like after Doctor Strange movie, everybody knows her, but yeah. She's not a very popular Marvel character. You have Hulk, you have Spider-Man, you have Iron Man, like Thor. Like, why don't you use that?
Right.
It's just crazy. Obviously, I was really wrong about using Ben Broad in the video, because I've heard that it's performing quite well because he's a very strong... CCG community.
In the CCG community.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I know, like, if you want to scale, nobody cares. That's what I said. Like, nobody cares. Nobody cares. But in the CCG community, apparently this works quite well. And honestly, it's not a very big market, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to just double down on that, most probably you want to use Penbot in the...
I don't know, for scaling.
Most probably no. But if you want to capture like the whole niche, most probably yes.
I think this is a very interesting space, just because historically it's been very concentrated, right? It was like Hearthstone and Yu-Gi-Oh on mobile
and anyway. Yeah, and that's it.
And that's it. And even Riot with Legends of Runeterra. I mean,
yeah.
I mean that game's not doing well. I mean, that's my guess, is that it's not doing well.
Yeah, I think I was looking into it, and like Marvel Snap out of all these like mobile versions was doing quite okay.
Okay.
In terms of like revenue per download and like how the curve increased over time.
Okay.
But that's mobile. You have PC and others, and also like Hearthstone was on PC first, and then they launched the mobile. So it's like not comparing apples to apples anyway.
Yeah.
But in terms of the UA and everything like during the global launch, why I think it was like a big splash, because it was just like, and then it decreased quite heavily after 3 weeks, and they was like Facebook, Google, ad networks, and everything just was stopped and then came back to Google and Facebook. And you can't scale with two channels. I mean, if you look at the Monopoly Go or Survivor, like they're spending everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just, now they scaled back quite heavily.
Yeah, I think the way that I would probably think about the longer term success of Snap is, okay, now you've got one big investor plus developer plus separate publisher.
It's a lot of parties.
And you got Marvel up in there as well.
Yeah.
And then you've got like, clearly Second Dinner has already publicly stated that they're more jazzed about their next game, right?
Yeah.
So then, like, how much attention, effort, energy is going to continue to go into Snap is my question. And were they incentivized properly to push? Okay. Well, I mean, I don't know. I this is all, like, these are the questions, though.
Yeah, honestly,
that people should think about.
If you have, this type of scale of the game, you're still, almost 600,000 DAUs, I think.
Okay.
Which is not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. And they're making like 500,000 based on the external tools on a daily basis, which is again like pretty good. If you compare it to other games, like a lot of companies would like those numbers.
Sure.
Without the third parties and all, obviously. So, but I think it's still like if they can improve on the monetization, which I think they've done quite recently, because I'm playing the game, they introduced some early special offers and they increased like the early monetization by a lot.
Okay.
So I guess like they're pretty skillful and this is still like very much a big learning experience for them, like how they can move the needle. And if they can move the needle here, I mean, they most probably can move the needle on the next game like easily. But I guess like there's going to be a different selection process for publisher or whatever.
We'll see.
Just pure speculation.
Yeah.
We don't know.
All right. So our last game.
Yes.
Frozen City. I love this game. And you know what? Actually, the interesting thing is that I had a game design mainly driven by a friend of mine that was very similar to this. And I'm excited just because it worked, but like the production value, what they did, kind of mixing city building with Idle.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. I'm really glad to see that this game is doing well. And I think you're going to see the ARPU curve on this thing just, you know, I think, you know, for me, the numbers, if we just look at the pure numbers, it compares okay.
Yeah, it's like 26 million revenue and then 17 million downloads cumulative since
launch. Right. But I actually think longer term, this has got some legs. I think we're also going to see other games that try to mimic this and maybe another
game. There's already like few okay. games in development.
Yeah.
Just like take on the Frozen City.
Yeah. And I think another game that can potentially, or Frozen City that iterates to being able to drive higher monetization because, you know, you're mixing collection, you're mixing, you know, saga-based city building, and you've also got like the heroes aspect and collection around the heroes. So
they have also like a battle element in there, so you can take your heroes or whatever and actually battle.
Right.
Which
so
is like few games within one game, basically.
Yeah, and so those additional vectors of progression and potential areas for monetization.
Vectors and systems. Here we are. I thought Jakub is always talking about system and vectors.
This thing has great core.
No.
Like, you got a lot to work with the game. So I actually am very, very positive on this game. You know, I am a little bit biased having previously worked at FunPlus and, you know, I actually think this is quite a strong launch. What do they do on the marketing side?
It's a very strong launch. I mean, they were very strong on the AppLovin side. I mean, look, so if you have idle game and you have ad monetization, the top one channel for it is just AppLovin. It's going to work so well. And this is what worked well for them as well, where we have it here, Frozen City. I mean, even now they're still running. I mean, they're, again, pretty big on iOS. And what we need to mention is the 30 or 40% uplift on the ads revenue.
Yep.
So 26 million, then plus like what, 13 additional, which is not bad. And they're actually quite big in US and also South Korea and some Asian markets as well. Because,
yeah.
I mean, they're from there as well. So, I mean, you can see the pattern. As soon as you are from that type part of the world, you know like what to do. But what stood out to me was the AppLovin, pretty big one, Google, pretty big one, Unity, pretty big one. They used quite a lot of playable ads, which is great on ad networks. And also, why I think this works quite well is the visual style of the low poly, basically, mm-hmm. which is very close to the hyper casual games. And low poly always, for me and the games that managed before, resulted in really low CPI in comparison to other okay. themes and visual styles. So this is a combination of low CPI and idle, which is also pretty low in comparison, well, low CPI in comparison to other genres.
Yep.
And then if you double down on ad monetization and AdRoas campaigns again, like that's all like all three buckets, which like ticks all on the low CPI side. So that's why I think like this works quite well. And also what they did, the company Century Games, they took Frozen City and then they put it into the Wildout Survival, which is a, basically a 4X game that they have. And they took the Frozen City onboarding, so it's all idle until the point where you actually play the game and then just got, I think, a level 7. Then it zooms out and you see the 4X map. It's just so smooth. Huh? It's amazing.
Okay.
It's perfect. So this was like, let's call it, I would say, again, pure speculation, very good test to see how it scales. And then it worked well in terms of the CPI and retention. That game has really strong retention. I think day one is like 60%. Mm-hmm. Day seven around 30, which is not bad for idle games. It's actually, well, I mean, back in the days when Idle Miner Tycoon was launched, it was like rumored that it's like 70 to 80% day one. Now we don't know
how they actually ran metrics for that, but was the I heard directly from the founders. But,
oh, nice. So this, you never know. So this was like a nice experiment, like how to actually onboard players to the 4X, because we know like 4X is pretty expensive and it's really hard to get players. So like this is like a whole story from launching Frozen City to actually launching Wildout Survival like after like 2 months. The timing in terms of the December, it's just not...
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
It's not fortunate, but again, you think about it, you have Golden Cohort.
Right.
It's 26th of December, so all the like e-commerce and all the shit, which is pre-Christmas, already like kind of fades
and
off.
And when does the App Store freeze?
It was before Christmas for 2 weeks, but I'm not sure if that's
so they didn't even,
the case anymore.
Yeah, okay.
And even if that freeze, like you have the... Well, release, build, and candidate, like,
featuring,
way.
Featuring doesn't matter anymore. So.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Oh, man. It's like, it's just, it's zero. Yeah. Like, it's, you have a bunch of downloads, but the revenue just stays flat. Yeah. At least on Google and iOS, like, maybe that does something. But so, in terms of timing, it's not as bad. I've even launched the games in like 22nd or 20th of December. It's like, again, like the golden cord is always there.
Okay.
And like if you power through the golden cord until January, it's like actually like not bad timing.
Okay.
So you scale or start to grow the budget from the end of December, and then it kind of grows because January, February is pretty good. Those are pretty good months overall for UA. So yeah, good.
Okay, so maybe those are all the five games. Maybe what we could do to wrap up is, so in your opinion, how would you rank these five games in terms of what you believe are the, I don't know, best performing or best for you?
But I think we have to discount Honkai because it's just
it's just number one.
It's just number one.
Number one.
Number one. Yeah, number one.
So what's your two to five?
So two is definitely Survivor IO.
That's what I would say.
That's like definitely.
Well.
And then I can't decide because it's very tricky in terms of the Monopoly Go. But I would say Frozen City, Marvel Snap, Monopoly Go, just because Monopoly Go is still pretty early, and I think like it's way like it's not profitable.
Okay, yeah, I would. So we're similar. Obviously, Honkai for me, number one. Number two would be Survivor.io.
Yep.
Number three, I would say Frozen City.
Nice.
Then Monopoly Go, then Snap.
Okay.
Because I would say like Monopoly Go because I wouldn't put them fifth because
I know.
We're still going to see what happens.
Yeah.
Or they will see what happens. We can only speculate. And then Snap, economics are kind of challenging, but I'm glad they were able to have a good push. And, by the way, love Nuverse.
Yeah.
Snap seems like an awesome game, and we're definitely rooting for them.
Nice, okay.
All right, I think that's it.
Perfect.
Anything
Thank
else?
Thank you very much. Yeah, all good. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everybody.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
All right.